Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Bottom of the eighth inning, 1-1 game. Look at this crowd at Comerica Park as J.D. Martinez steps to the plate to lead off here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
You think everybody missed him?
Oh, you love it.
That's pretty neat right there.
Listen to this reception for J.D. Injured in mid-June against Kansas City. He swings and drives one. Deep to center. On the run is Eaton. He's looking up.
Wow.
It's gone.
Are you kidding me?
You talk about rising to the moment. J.D. Martinez, the first pitch off the disabled list. A bomb to straightaway center. 2-1 Tigers.
You cannot make it up, folks.
The 1-0. Swinging a soft ground ball to second. Kinsler charges, fields, flips to Cabrera. Tigers have won 8 straight.
I'm not disappointed at all, really. Obviously, it didn't go how I wanted it to, but I competed. We've seen what they've kind of been able to do the last couple days. Obviously, they're super hot right now. Came up with a game plan, tried to change some things, you know, make some adjustments based on what they've been doing, and can go our way tonight.
Boy, you know, I mean, obviously the walks, and bunch that with a bunch of 0-2 hits and not just singles. You know, long innings and, you know, crooked numbers, and, you know, on a night when we really wanted to try to let him go deep, we couldn't let him go any farther. And, and you start throwing that many pitches that early in the game, everything's tough. I mean, I knew I was going to get thrown out because you can't go out there and argue those. I just needed to express my frustration.
Pitch fouls one, first base. Votto over by the wall is there, and he can't hang on to it. The fan, look at Votto, look at him and says, dude, you're a Reds fan.
Fans got to know better than this. Is Joey Votto's got a great beat on this ball. This guy's not even realizing it. Now, with that being said, I don't know if I'm going to blame the fan completely. Yes, he should have gotten out of the way.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Get him out of the way. Get out of the way. What are you trying to do? Oh, my goodness. Welcome to the extravaganza on a Thursday afternoon, 8 minutes after 3 o'clock. Appreciate you being a part of it. We are ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. A nice little montage of stuff. How about the moment, Jim Cushlin? By the way, nice job with the montage.
Thank you.
As always. How about the moment for J.D. Martinez?
I mean, that's just crazy. First pitch that he literally sees off the DL because he didn't start yesterday. He was
How long was the stint, by the way? How long was he on?
It was very early June, like the first couple of days of June. So it's been almost two months. Yeah.
Almost a full 8 weeks.
Well, you kind of have to when you have a broken elbow.
Yeah. So after 8 weeks of being on the DL, the first pitch you see is that. Play that again. Do you have that highlight again? Or do you have to play it right from the beginning of the montage?
No, I got it.
Even if you do, set it up. We can hear the moment again. I'm okay with this.
Bottom of the eighth inning, 1-1 game. Look at this crowd at Comerica Park as J.D. Martinez steps to the plate to lead off here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
You think everybody missed him?
Oh, you love it.
That's pretty neat right there.
Listen to this reception for J.D. Injured in mid-June against Kansas City. He swings and drives one. Deep to center. On the run is Eaton. He's looking up.
Wow.
It's gone.
Are you kidding me?
Man. You talk about rising to the moment. J.D. Martinez, the first pitch off the disabled list. A bomb to straightaway center. 2-1 Tigers.
You cannot make it up, folks.
That is pretty amazing.
And that ended up being the game winner, and that's why as of this moment, it's only 2 games now, but bad news for the Tigers, good news for the Indians so far this afternoon. Indians finally thumping the Twins instead of the other way around, and it was not a good day for Jordan Zimmermann, who, like JD yesterday, coming off the DL today.
That's right, just coming off of the DL and getting his first start, and obviously he was not ready, or I don't know, is it fair to say that, you know, it's easy to second guess and say, well, he wasn't ready, they took him off too soon, either that or he's just rusty, either that or he's just having a bad day. I mean, it's really hard to figure.
I'm going to go with bad day, because the whole rusty or not ready, isn't that what rehab assignments are for? He had at least two, if I'm not mistaken, rehab starts with the Hens.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
maybe it's just a bad day. But then again, he wasn't pitching all that well for the Tigers before he went injured. Good part for the Tigers was the early part of the season. Then he kind of fell off, and then he got hurt.
He was one of the best starters in the American League, if not all of baseball, in April and the first half of May.
Yeah.
So like the first 6 weeks, but yeah, then in the second half of May, and as you pointed out, it was in early June, he went on the DL. He was not himself. And I don't know if there was the injury was brewing or whatever it was at the time. Little doubt that Jordan Zimmermann was going in the wrong direction at that point. So maybe it shouldn't be such a shock that he came out here and, to start his second half, if you will, because, his first start after. That he's getting knocked around here. Zimmer has a – here's just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. Not even the second half of May. Maybe I should have just said he was really great in April and stopped there. Because according to ESPN stats and information, Zimmerman now has a 6.44 ERA since May 1. He was a major league best 0.55 in April.
He was untouchable in April.
Yeah. I mean, and that's amazing. 0.55. And today's outing matched the shortest of his career. According to ESPN.
1 2/3, 6 runs, 6 hits, a couple of bombs, including a 5-run inning in the second, which drove him from the game. And that's the difference right now. 6-1 in that game as they are in, oh goodness, what inning was it again? I think it's a sixth.
They are in top seven.
Top
now.
Seven, okay.
Top seven, White Sox, it's still up 6-1. Indians, bottom of the eighth, are up 8-2. So this could be, by the time it's done, back to a 3-game lead. But still, something's going on and everybody, you know, Jim, you, when we talked about, and this isn't a pick on you, this is just for the sake of the discussion. When we had that conversation, it was around, I don't know, the end of June, right? It was right before the All-Star break.
It was right before the break.
So maybe early July, right before the break, when we had that little Twitter conversation, and you tweeted something about the race is over, or something to that effect, something close to it, and our friend Cody said, you're writing off the division already? It's not even the All-Star break?
My response was, I'm almost there.
Right. And the reason why you said that, if I recall, and is the same reason that I said I'm not there yet either, but here's why. And I think almost everybody we've talked to, from Indians writers to Tigers writers to
National writers,
have all said, yeah, and the reason why they think the Indians are going to win this division is because with their pitching the way that it is, they don't have, a long losing streak in them. Their pitching is too good for them to have prolonged, runs of bad baseball, because they're going to get a great start, if not every night, every other night, and if not every other night, every third night. And if there is a 3 or 4 game losing streak, they're going to get one on the fourth or the fifth night, and they're going to turn it around. And that's what everybody said. And yet, as we sit here today, that Indians wrote, pitching staff is in some serious trouble. Danny Salazar had another bad outing 3 nights ago, ended up on the 15-day DL with something wrong with his elbow. Carlos Carrasco went the next night. Carlos Carrasco had been just tremendous since coming off of the DL. He's had two bad starts in a row. Yesterday, Trevor Bauer just gets beat around and then is talking this morning about how he's not worried about it at all. He thinks he did fine. And now, of course, who was on the hill today?
Mike Clevenger. Who they brought up from AAA
to make that start? Okay,
and he actually twistedly went the longest of any Indian starter this series, and still didn't get through the fifth.
How about that? Yeah.
And I just counted up to that pitching. The Indians' longest losing streak has been at any point this season has been 3 games. It's happened 5 times, but it's only been 3 games.
But going back again to the end of their streak against the Tigers, when they had won 11 in a row against the Tigers prior to losing to them on what day? That was back on July 6th.
Yep.
So going back almost a month, because today is August 4th, excuse me. Going back to that date, there are a lot more L's than there are W's in their record. They lost to the Tigers, then that streak, and then they lost 3 out of 4 to the Yankees. Then they won 2 out of 3 against the Twins.
The only time they've beaten the Twins in a series is even with the win today. That's to avoid a sweep. So that's still a they have now played 4 series against the Twins, and even if they hang on to this one, which is now 9-2, by the way, that's 3 series losses and only 1 win.
Then there was took 2 out of 3 from Kansas City. Then were swept 3 straight by the Orioles. Then split with the Nats.
Which could have easily been a sweep. That's the one where the first game was when they got 4 in the 9th off Papelbon.
Then they won the 3 straight against the Athletics before losing 3 straight against the Twins. They've been a 500 or just slightly below 500 team since that time. So, you know, and while they still hold this 2-game lead going into today, and maybe it'll be 3 by the time we're all done here and it's looking that way, there's still something going on. I don't know what it is. I tweeted something sarcastic, and I talked about it yesterday about, you know, hey, thanks to the Indians for playing Let's Screw With The Fans for a few months before we collapse, 2016 edition.
Right.
And, that was before yesterday's 3rd straight pounding. I mean, they give up double-digit runs to the Twins 3 straight nights, 12-5, 10-6, and 13-5. Before going out there and beating them right now.
Yes, some of the numbers the Twins have been putting up in this series prior to today are just astounding. Two of them that jump off the top of my head, I think they're at 29 or something to that, something like that, extra base hits as a team so far in the series. I've been keeping track of the number, relatively speaking, because our good friend Dennis Manilov, I've seen various tweets the last couple of days as he's been adding it up, and that's just ridiculous. And then earlier in this game, I saw a number, Mauer, in this series. The attention has been on Kepler and what he's done for the Twins in the first 3 games. Mauer is 12 of 17, or now 12 of 18 in this series. The last time somebody was that good in a 4-game series against the Indians, he went 12 of 18. In 1936, his name was Lou Gehrig.
Wow.
I saw that stat during the game.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That is pretty amazing. Okay, so you look at the way that they are being beaten up by the Twins, the worst team in the American League, one of the 3 worst teams probably in baseball. And you look at and the fact that it's a simultaneous hottest streak of the season for the Tigers, watching that 7.5-game lead they once had in the division be whittled down to 2 going into today. And you ask yourself, are the Indians, who are collapsing, really not as good as advertised, or are the Tigers, who were scuffling and now on a hot streak like this, are they better? Are they better than anybody thought they were? When people like you, and again, that's not to pick, just to kind of say,
sure.
We're perhaps ready to write the division off and give it to the Indians. There's a really interesting piece right now on the Tigers on ESPN.com by Kerry Strang, who covers them for ESPN, and it's asking the question: are the Tigers good? A look at the recent success. Is this a sign that they're that good, or is this just a hot streak based on a competition, based on other various factors? Cameron Maben made a really interesting comparison or analogy or whatever you want to call it to this Tigers lineup to describe the 2016 team. He gave credit to his dad for it, but he's the one who said it to the media. He said, this lineup is like a python. He said, you can try to get away, but we just keep squeezing, and we keep squeezing, eventually until it seems like we kind of devour you. That's what he said prior to yesterday's 2-1 win over the White Sox, the 8th straight. It was a pretty good way of describing the club he thought, a talented club with a hard-nosed attitude. Quote, that's how my dad described it, and I was like, you're right. It's just very true. That's how it seems. When we have good at-bats, play the whole game and never quit, we seem to, more than anything, have quality at-bats, and that's all you can ask for. When you have a lineup that's deep, 1 through 9, or pretty doggone close to 1 through 9, it's a great point. You might get yourself out of it, just to borrow the Python analogy, you might get yourself out of the first coil with the first 3 hitters. But then suddenly, here comes 4, 5, and 6. And if you somehow manage to still be breathing after that, here comes 7, 8, and 9,
yep,
when everybody's healthy, especially when you got JD who pinch hit and had that grand moment yesterday. When you have that kind of depth, 1 through 9, you know, there is no, and again, I'm borrowing from the analogy to the Python, but it's also just kind of true from a pressure standpoint in baseball. There's no room for the pitcher to breathe. In most lineups, you have a moment where if you get through their best hitters, we're like, okay, now I'm down to the part where I can relax and just throw a little bit here. It's not a pressure pack situation. I know every mistake I make here isn't going to be in danger of leaving the yard or you know, being an RBI hit or something. You have room to breathe. But when you have the kind of lineup that the Tigers we knew could have, you know, going into the season, that's what everybody said anyway. The kind that the Rangers kind of do have now that they added Carlos Beltran and Jonathan Lucroy. When you have that 1-9 kind of depth, there's no time and no ability and no opportunity for the pitcher to take that deep breath. It's as if you are in the clutches or the coils of the snake that continues to squeeze. I think it's a great analogy.
No, it absolutely is a great analogy, and it fits a lot of the times. As for the other parts of that article that you referenced from ESPN.com, to me, when I look at the Tigers, and Tigers fans will blatantly know this over the course of the last couple of years, whether you're talking the playoff years of 2-3 years ago or last year's debacle, for whatever reason, they just kind of mess around, it seems. And it's as if half the time they're not even in it, and that's how you have lackluster stretches that seem to go on for a month or two. Are the Tigers this good? Part of me thinks yes, because in this recent streak they've been on, which looks like it will end at 8, it's 6-2 now in that game in the 7th, and we'll keep you posted, of course, through the afternoon. That's part of the reason I love the afternoon baseball when you get it, because it just adds a little extra element to the shows, I feel. I keep thinking, especially from a lineup perspective, they're finally playing like the team they are on paper,
yeah,
in a way. So I think to a degree that they are this good, or at least they were supposed to be. Especially in the lineup. Especially
I think they might even be playing better than what they are on paper, though. I think they might be playing a little, at least in the, I mean, everybody, anytime you go on a streak like this, yep, an 8-gamer, or the Indians franchise record 14-gamer, you go on a streak like that, you're playing better than what you are.
Yep.
Okay, because nobody's 14 in a row, oh, good. Nobody's 8 in a row, good, really, at least depending on the opponents that they're playing at the time. And that's what's most impressive about the Tigers, by the way. They were beating really good opponents before the Sox here. The first two sweeps in this 8-game winning streak were Red Sox and Astros. Both were in and remain, to some extent, in their division races going into those series. And now the White Sox, not so much, but nobody's that good, generally speaking, and I don't think they are either, but they're playing their best and close to their paper ability, if you will, like you say on paper. Here's just some of the numbers from ESPN, as I mentioned, from Kerry Strang. Entering today, so let's not count today, the Tigers are riding their longest winning streak in not just this year, but in over 2 years, first of all. Not since April 29th to May 7th of 2014 have the Tigers won that many games in a row. They're now in sole possession of the second wild card spot in the American League, trailing the Indians by the mere 2 games going into today. How do they go from a middling team heading into this year's trade deadline to a team that appears very good? Here is a look at the numbers. And by the way, doesn't it seem like eons ago that we were on a Brad Ausmus watch?
It does seem like a long time ago. I still remember it because when it came to its crescendo, they won 4 out of 5 and all the talk quieted for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it was a matter of, like, you know, everybody was kind of watching Twitter or watching the wire and saying, waiting for the word that, you know, the Tigers pulled the trigger here.
Yeah, because they had lost 7 in a row and it eventually became 11 out of 12. And when you got that final loss, that's when we were on like a full-on Brad Ausmus, watch mode,
yeah,
and then they won 4 out of 5, and we really have, despite a lot of Tigers fans still grumbling about him in general, as they have since the day he was hired,
right,
the legitimate talk of he's about to be fired completely subsided at that point. We haven't really heard it since.
Well, and you know what we're seeing right now is kind of a lesson, maybe a teachable moment here about people getting too overzealous, during down times, to say, oh, we need a change, fire the manager. Because obviously sticking with it, Al Avila and Mike Ilitch sticking with it and saying, no, we're gonna ride this out and see what he can do. He obviously has turned things around to the point where we're sitting where we are now, with a two-game deficit, going into today. And it'll be 3 after today, it appears. But here's some of the numbers we're talking about. Entering today, the Tigers offense had a combined slash line of 316, 384, 534. According to ESPN Stats and Information, for comparison's sake, Miguel Cabrera has a slash line of 306, 384, and 544. So in other words, the whole team is basically being Miguel Cabrera right now. Think about that. That's that python. The whole lineup is hitting like Miguel Cabrera. Cabrera's slash line, 306, 384, 544.
Wow.
The team, 316, 384, 534. I mean, that's just amazing, and that's during the streak is what we're talking about. Furthermore, Cabrera and Victor have combined to hit .453 entering this game today. And when both players are hitting, success generally follows to the tune of 35-14. That's .714 winning percentage baseball when both Cabrera and Martinez get a hit in the same game this season. So if Miggy gets one and Victor gets one, you're going to win that game. 35-14 anyway, according to ESPN. That's a momentum factor. Brad Ausmus said you could call it contagious, especially in regards to the offense. But it's not just that incredible offensive production that I just described where the whole lineup is doing their best Miggy imitation. The pitching has been a contributing factor as well. Entering today, again, you got to kind of discount Jordan Zimmermann today. But entering today, the Tigers had a 3 ERA, that's club-wide, 3 ERA, and a 1.16 whip, walks and hits per inning pitch, during the streak. They had a 4.44 ERA and a 1.37 this season prior to that stretch. So they have cranked up their game in a huge way during this as well. Justin Verlander was just named the American League Pitcher of the Month for going 4-0 with a 1.69 and 48 strikeouts in 42 and two-thirds innings. Anybody remember that guy? Yeah, that used to be a pretty normal month for a guy like Justin Verlander. It hasn't been, but it is certainly, you know, timed up perfectly with the way they've hit the ball in the month of July and did hit the ball in the month of July and now in the first few days of August. Let's see.
Had to throw that in there. It is now a final. 9-2 Indians do get the win. So if the Tigers somehow pull this out, they're down 4. It would stay at 2, but otherwise it's going back to 3 as the Indians do get the win and avoid the sweep.
All right. Thank you for the update, good sir. So it looks like that's what it's going to be. And that's, you know, that's fine. I mean, that 8-gamer wasn't going to be a, you know, a 14-gamer the way the Indians had put together here. So an 8-game winning streak is just amazing. And you lose the series finale, no big deal. But back to the point. Zimmermann said, I was a cheerleader for a month, and it's going to be a lot better when I'm out there able to compete a little bit. Again, he said this going into today, and then he went out there today and didn't really compete at all, got banged around. But the Tigers are hoping that he'll augment what has already been an impressive team effort. The team is encouraged by the success and optimistic about the playoff hunt, but players are not exactly shocked. Quote, this is Cameron Maben again, the one who talked about the Python. He said, you look around and everyone in here can play. There's really no, and I don't understand why this is a surprise. No weakness. We don't have a bunch of scrubs in here. He said, we got Ian, Miggy, Victor, Nick Castellanos, Iggy. You got Mac, meaning James McCann. And he said, we don't have a bunch of scrubs in here. And now, of course, you bring in J.D. Martinez back with that dramatic, what turned out to be the game-winning home run last night, pinch hitter off of Chris Sale. Then you really have a team that is hot. Now, I don't know that we got the answer to the question, but we did point out how incredibly symbiotic the Tigers offense and the Tigers pitching have been in this stretch. The pitchers knocked a 1.66 runs off of their own ERA as a staff. No, I'm sorry, 1.44. They were 4.44 on the season, but in the winning streak, 3 even. And 1.37 whip down to 1.16 whip. And the offense, well, I'll repeat it again because it is so amazing. A slash line that compares to Miguel Cabrera's as an entire lineup. The lineup is 316, 384, 534. Miguel Cabrera is 306, 384, 544. And so 10 points higher and 10 points, well, dead even. Hold on, where did it go? 306, 316, 384, 384, and 544, 534 for Miguel Cabrera compared to the rest of the lineup. So in other words, almost a wash. So that's how much better they have played. Can they project that out to be, I don't know, two-thirds of what that is compared to where they were for the last 2 months of the baseball season? Or is this just going to be the hot stretch that eventually turns into what they were prior to the hot stretch, which is about 2.5 months of baseball in which they were, you know, underperforming and injured, of course, as well? I don't know the answer, but what I do know is that the Indians have watched them in their rearview mirror getting closer and closer and closer, and do not think for 1 second that the Indians' performance hasn't been impacted by the extra pressure that the Tigers keep providing. And that is something that, you know, if they continue to just not to win eight in a row or win 7 of every 8 or even 6 out of every 8, but if they continue to win series like this and keep that pressure on the Indians, that young Indians club is absolutely prone to collapse. In my mind, despite Terry Francona's guiding hand, They are a very young club, and they are absolutely prone to collapsing if the pressure is on, and that's something that the Tigers, I don't think, do feel, because they are a much more veteran type of lineup. Yeah, you have some younger guys too mixed in there, including Fulmer and especially Fulmer, but you have veterans up and down that lineup from Miguel to Victor and to JD and to Kinsler and all the guys that we just mentioned. So the pressure is certainly going to be on the Indians if the Tigers can keep up even a semblance of what they are now. If they can play two-thirds as well offensively and on the mound as they did during this eight-game winning streak, Kush.
Yeah, and that's kind of the interesting deal with the whole thing. And for the Indians, it's based all on what their pitching has been or not been doing in recent weeks to playing near this 500. But because they're still good enough overall, that's why a losing streak has not gone farther than three. And, you know, for the Tigers, even though they're down 6-2 in the eighth in this one against Chicago, have played very, very well. They're getting their guys back. We've known for a couple weeks now that this is why Al Avila didn't want to do anything at the deadline, among other reasons, of course. And, you know, the veteran part is an interesting key. I mean, we know that they did not have a good season overall last year, but otherwise the bulk of this roster, as opposed to the Indians roster, has kind of been there, done that. They've been to those types of positions deeper in the playoffs. Obviously, they haven't won any World Series, as we know, with this group in the last couple of years, but they've been to places in the playoffs that the Indians team hasn't. That we all, even you and me, Bob, really don't count that one game from 2013 anymore. So they have that extra, you know, that veteran guile, if you will, to help them in these types of situations that the Indians don't have a lot of that. And at times in recent weeks, I think it's been showing.
Yeah, no question about it. And by the way, I was just looking something up before we take a time out here, and I do believe we're going to be able to catch up with Anthony Fenech. I can't swear to it yet, but I do think we are going to be able to do that because I heard from him a few minutes ago. So we'll try to catch up before he has to go down and cover in the locker room. But one more battle between the Indians and the Tigers, Jim, that we have been covering,
The
Rookie of the Year battle.
Yes.
Tyler Naquin was just named the American League's Rookie of the Month for the second consecutive month. He hit in the month of July 348 with 14 runs scored, 5 doubles, 6 home runs, 15 RBIs, and a stolen base. That's the second straight month he was the Rookie of the Month. And remember, he's still mostly platooning. He's still not hitting much or playing much against
left-handers. Wasn't even in the lineup today, for example.
Yeah. So I mean, think about those numbers, you know, and that's just primarily against right-handed pitchers. 348, 14 runs, 5 doubles, 6 homers, 15 RBIs, and a steal. In the month of July. So that is pretty amazing. All right, let's take a time out here. I do think we have Anthony Fenech scheduled. We want to check in with him. He is at Comerica, obviously. We're going to talk to him before that game ends, and he has to get down there and do interviews. So let's get our time out now. Right here, SportsCenter coming your way on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The extravaganza rolls on, talking a lot of baseball this first hour right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And as such, it's a good place to go, just to the ballpark. Let's go to Comerica, where the Tigers are in the eighth inning now, I believe. And Anthony Fenech can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but I think we are in the bottom of the eighth inning. White Sox 6, Tigers 2, as we get a Tigers and American League Central update from Mr. Fenech. Anthony, how are you, sir?
Good, Bob. How are you?
I'm good, brother. Appreciate you spending the time. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, first of all, today, and then we'll talk about the bigger picture here in a very, very, what is now a very, very tight division race, one that a lot of us were ready to almost write off when the Indians had a 7.5-game lead just three short weeks ago or so. Jordan Zimmermann comes off of the DL. He did have a couple of rehab starts. He was apparently ready and healthy, but he didn't pitch very healthy today. What do you know? What are your thoughts on what you saw from Zimmermann today?
Well, Zimmermann didn't look healthy, that's for sure. His fastball was around 89, 90 miles an hour, which is never a good sign. He just didn't look good at all. I mean, he looked like, frankly, that he was still hurt. And, you know, going through these rehab starts, he said he wasn't hurt. He said he felt healthy, but he said he felt rusty too. And, he looked both. Here today, 1 2/3, tying his career low in innings pitched. So it's definitely a concern for the Tigers. It would, at this point, we're going to know more from manager Brad Auspice here shortly, but at this point it would be surprising to see them send him out there again, looking the way that he did today.
Anthony Fennett covers the Tigers, of course, for the Detroit Free Press. Tigers, after an 8-game winning streak, taking it on the chin today to the White Sox. Zimmerman gave up 6 hits, 6 runs, all of them earned, 2 walks, did not strike out a batter, 2 home runs in just 1 2/3 today. Quite a different comeback from the disabled list than what you got from J.D. Martinez. The pinch hit home run last night, 2 more knocks today, 2 for 3 with a run scored today. He looks like he really never missed any time at all.
Yeah, you know, and he kind of was prophetic when he got hurt in Kansas City. He mentioned that, you know, maybe this will be better, that, you know, I'll get 6 to 8 weeks off and I'll be fresh coming back down the stretch when we're in the Rays. And really, that's what he's done. I mean, yesterday was nothing short of kind of like a movie scene there, the way he came off the bench and hit the first pitch from Chris Sale over the left center field wall for a home run. It was pretty crazy. But JD, I mean, he's going to give the lineup a little bit of a shot right here, because, look, I mean, everybody sees the Tigers lineup 1 through 9. I mean, Justin Upton is hitting 7th today, and Upton's been hitting better, as of late in July. So it's a very formidable lineup. But, as the office has said, and as I think everybody sees, the Tigers are only going to go as far as their starting pitching will take them. So Zimmerman right now is the topic of the day.
Anthony Fennick is our guest, and yeah, you're right. There's no doubt. And this line, you know, I was talking about this before. Cameron Maben made a comment to, and I don't know if it was just to this ESPN reporter, but that's where I read about it. And he was actually quoting his dad. He said, "This lineup is like a python." He said, "You try to get away, but we just keep squeezing, squeezing, and squeezing until eventually we kind of devour you." And I think it's true. If you're going to get the kind of production you can from this lineup when everybody is healthy, it's going to be there, whether it's top of the order, middle of the order, bottom of the order. It seems like no matter when you try, a pitcher tries to take a breath, there's somebody who can beat you in that lineup. If the starting pitching can just be adequate, it doesn't have to be spectacular, it doesn't have to have the best ERA in the American League the way the Indian starting pitching did up until the month of August started, it just has to be adequate, and you've got potentially a playoff team here in Detroit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've made it more of a race with the Indians in the Central than I had expected at this point. I think it's going to be a good race down the stretch here. And look, the Indians are kind of, they've showed some chinks in the armor as of late. And especially, you know, Danny Salazar's in the DL. So that's really the Indians' trump card, so to speak, is their starting pitching. And then the Tigers, they have questions with their starting pitching, and it goes beyond Zimmerman. I mean, Michael Fulmer's workload. There's Matt Boyd, who's struggled. Anibal Sanchez, even though he's looked better, and that's not saying much, even though he's looked better lately, he's still a question mark. So really, outside of Fulmer and Justin Verlander, the starting rotation, I mean, Mike Pelfrey's on the DL right now. So starting pitching to me is still a concern. They're a little bit thin in that category. But it won't keep the offense from, you know, kind of matching together and, winning some games here and there. But, yeah, it'll be interesting. But the Tigers look in much better shape right now than they did 2 weeks ago, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the Indians look in much worse shape. No question about that. The lead from 7.5 for the Indians over the Tigers down to 2 going into today. It'll be 3, it looks like, here at the end of the day. The Indians have already won. The Tigers look like they're going to fall here in the series finale against the White Sox. Jim Cushing, go ahead.
And you know, back to something on the lineup, too, Anthony, because I completely agree. Obviously, you know, pitching is still a concern, but when people have been asking during this win streak to me, you know, are the Tigers really this good? And I say, well, they're finally playing, especially offensively, like they are, as good as they are on paper. And this, on paper, was always a decent team, and especially in a lineup. And one guy that always symbolizes that for me for the Tigers is Miguel Cabrera, who, by the way, just a few moments ago, it's now 6-3 as he hit one literally off his shoe tops out of the yard. And there was a point a couple weeks ago where people were wondering, what's wrong with Miguel Cabrera? It feels like he's been slumping. Now, of course, we're talking Miguel Cabrera, so his numbers are still what a lot of guys would take for a full season, but they're not some of the numbers we're used to. He, like everybody else, has been playing a lot better, and that's why I think we are seeing the Tigers at their best. You always see a team at their best when they're in a win streak like this, but so far in 2016, during this recent time period, not just the 8-game winning streak, but really since the break at minimum, this is, to me at least, Anthony, looked like the team that I thought they were on paper the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I don't think, that's in any small part due to the fact that Cabrera's bat has heated up. I mean, it was just a matter of time. I mean, you know, he was struggling the first half of July. So was Victor Martinez. But when you got a guy like that that's carrying the team offensively, and then you've got the embarrassment of riches in terms of power that they have throughout their lineup, I mean, it is one of the best lineups in baseball. And I agree with you. They're playing their best baseball. I think they're playing a lot more confident than they were early in the season. And really for all the question marks of their starting pitching, the starting pitching has been adequate enough as of late. But I think the big difference between this Tigers team and Tigers teams in years past, not last year because they were in last place, but the 2 or 3 years before then, is that they have a bullpen now. I find their bullpen to be a solid spot for them, let's say. Shane Green's been big for them. Francisco Rodriguez has been solid in the ninth inning. So their bullpen to me is what separates them in terms of, you know, they got the offense, their starting pitching is there. But the bullpen is kind of what puts them over the edge for me right now.
Anthony Fennec is our guest. He is, of course, the Tigers beat writer for the Detroit Free Press. Anthony, we didn't get really a chance to talk about the deadline since we haven't talked to you since Monday and the fact that the Tigers stood still and said, we're just going to run with what we've got. Were you surprised? Were you disappointed? Did you think they made the right decision?
No, I wasn't surprised at all. I thought they were trying as hard as they could to get a starting pitcher because of the questions I brought up. But I just think it came to it was a point where they just don't have anything in their farm system to get one of those starting pitchers, and that's obviously an indictment on the farm system. Because look, if you're in July and you need to get a back end starter, like say, you know, a Wade Miley or a Hector Santiago or a Jeremy Hellickson, you should have enough in your system to get a guy like that, but they don't. And they're still in the second year of their rebuilding process in terms of the farm system. And those three guys that they got, and they got four guys, including Jacoby Jones, but those three guys that they got last season at the deadline, Michael Fulmer, Daniel Norris, Matt Boyd, those were guys that they weren't going to be trading. And they're not really part of their farm system anymore. They're helping out the major league team. So that's kind of what it comes down to. So I wasn't surprised they didn't make a move.
So what do you make of the Indians' sudden collapse? And I don't want to call it a full-on collapse. Obviously, it's still August. It's not in early August. It's not even in September yet before what you could really call collapse, you know, in the pennant race and down the stretch run. But this is a team that had a seven-and-a-half-game lead that now is going to, after today, have a three-game lead probably. It's top of the ninth, 6-3. And their starting pitching, which is what you and I and Cushlin and virtually every other writer nationally, locally, or in Cleveland or Detroit that we've talked to has said is what's going to set them apart. It's struggling. You mentioned Salazar a few minutes ago on the DL. Carrasco suddenly has had two poor starts in a row. Bauer is starting to fade like he did last year. He was very solid early in the season, and then down in the last 2 months, not so much. Ended up leaving the lineup, or the rotation, I should say. So even though they added Andrew Miller to strengthen the bullpen, the starting pitching, which has been the strength of this club, suddenly looks very vulnerable, and they look beatable and catchable by the Tigers.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that the Indians can't afford is lose a starting pitcher like they have with Salazar. And, I mean, that's not a very good situation when he's talking about, I feel something in the elbow. Look, I think it was just a matter of time before the Indians came down to earth a little bit. I don't think they're as bad as they've been playing lately. I mean, we've seen some teams, no more notably than the Tigers recently, struggle against the Twins. They've actually been hitting the ball pretty well. But I think the Indians will be right back at it. But they've certainly let the Tigers kind of climb back into this race, and it's going to be a lot more interesting than it looked 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no question about it. So, I mean, do you have any sense, because last time I asked you this about, I don't know, I think it was more like 3 weeks ago, it was shortly after the break, I think, or the All-Star break. You were kind of, I think it's still the Indians division to win, or the Indians division to lose, as it were, because the Tigers, for all of their, for all of their offense, you know, they're still inconsistent pitching wise. And if you get into a pitching matchup with the Indians, you're going to lose most of the time. So you kind of felt that way then. Now that the Tigers have just ripped off eight in a row, even though they're going to lose today, probably here in the ninth, and the Indians have basically looked like a 500 team since we ran through it. Since the Tigers ended their losing streak against the Indians, And they won the 12th game to improve the record to 1-11 against Cleveland. When they won that game, that set in motion a stretch of baseball that the Indians have played since then that is essentially 500. So do you still feel like it's the Indians' division to lose, or do you feel like that the momentum? I told Jim a few minutes ago, every win the Tigers get and every series that they win, I just think they become bigger and bigger and bigger in the Indians' rearview mirror as they get closer and closer. And I think the Indians are a young club that is prone possibly to kind of feeling that pressure, and I don't want to say choking, but being squeezed by the python that Cameron Maybin talked about.
No, I mean, I think now it's pretty much a toss-up, and I would actually give the edge to the Tigers because of what you just said. I mean, the Tigers are a seasoned veteran team that's accustomed to winning outside of last year. They got a lot of momentum. They know how good they are, and I think Cameron Maybin's comments just kind of speak that kind of tone. But again, to me, it's going to come down to the starting pitching. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse here. We always talk about the starting pitching, but, you know, if Salazar's out for a while, he's not able to make some starts, well, that shifts in the Tigers' favor. Zimmerman's not back healthy, and he's pitching like this. I mean, the Tigers have a lot of youth in their starting rotation right now as well, with Fulmer and Matt Boyd. And if Daniel Norris comes up to take a start from Jordan Zimmerman, so that's pretty much three rookies going forward. So there's a lot of youth there. With the way things have played out the last couple of weeks, and the way the Tigers' offense has come to life, which isn't really that much of a surprise with the names in the lineup, and you figure that as the summer wore on, they would start warming up. I think the Tigers have a little bit of an edge right now, and I know three games is three games, but at the beginning of August, a little bit of a dead heat. So,
yeah.
As always, it's going to come down to not only the starting pitching, but these six games they play at the end of the season are going to be pretty big.
Yeah, and the momentum does play a factor. I firmly believe that. That's why, especially when you have a young club and some younger players they're relying on. And the Indians are relying on a lot of young guys. They've got veterans too, yes, but they're relying on a lot of young guys. And I think that momentum and pressure really does play a role. Hey, before you go, a little love for Miguel Cabrera. You mentioned that home run off of the Shoe Tops, or maybe it was Cush who mentioned that. Miggy's 25th, cuts the lead to 3, obviously here in the 9th. That also makes him the fourth active player, and Anthony, you probably already have the stat, the fourth active player with 12 seasons of 25 home runs or more, according to ESPN Stats and Info. The others, Alex Rodriguez, Albert Pujols, and David Ortiz. That's not bad company at all for Miguel Cabrera.
Not at all. I'm going to have to go add that to my game story, but I'm on deadline, Bob, so I got to go.
Go get it done, man. Thank you. Appreciate it, Anthony. Anthony Fenix got to go get his job done. He works for the Detroit Free Press, not for us. He's just kind enough to join us with some analysis and some updates and thoughts on Tigers baseball when he gets the opportunity to do so. So there you go. Yeah, Cush, that's a pretty interesting stat there. There are four active players who have had 12 years of 25 home runs or more. A-Rod, Albert Pujols, and those are two guys who would be Hall of Famers if it weren't for the PEDs for
A-Rod. Right.
I think A-Rod is going to get the same exact treatment Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, and others, and rightfully so.
No, definitely. He was just as much of a lightning rod as Bonds himself was. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
And in fact was busted and suspended for a whole season over this, which Bonds never was. So that's a big difference. But anyway, he would be a Hall of Famer. Ortiz is going to be a Hall of Famer, and Albert Pujols is going to be a Hall of Famer, and so is Miguel Cabrera. So those four guys, the only four to have 12 years of 25 home runs or more.
Yep.
That's an amazing stat.
That really is. And it just speaks to how good of a hitter, you know, he's been. I mean, we aren't that far off from just, what was it, 2 years ago when, oh yeah, Miguel Cabrera, best overall hitter in baseball. And I can't believe, in a twist away, Bob, this is how much
you could still make that argument. I mean,
and you can. Yeah, you absolutely can.
A lot of people do. I mean, some people have said, well, that's been passed. The torch has been passed to Mike Trout or Bryce Harper, although Harper this year is having a crapper of a season after his MVP last year. But Trout or, you know, Manny Machado or, some of these other tremendous, bats for average and power and run production and clutch and huge slash lines and so on. But Miggy, while he started the season slow, really, kind of takes a backseat to no one here. His batting average is now 308. His OBP is 383. His slugging is 551. Mm-hmm. You mentioned 25 home runs, total up 70 RBIs right now, and that's a slow start to the season for him.
Right.
And there's still 2 months of baseball to be played. He's going to finish near, I would suspect, mid-30s, near 40 maybe, another 10 or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
He could be pushing 40, 100-plus RBIs again. You know, when you compare that to the other guys, that when you ask who's the best hitter in baseball right now, he's still got to be considered in that conversation.
Oh, without question. Without question. And by the way, humorously, you mentioned Bryce Harper's season and some of those younger guys. Incidentally, at this moment, Bryce Harper's at 234, 20 homers, 56 RBIs, 15 steals. Despite that being a crapper of a season for Bryce Harper, most guys would still take that for their full season. That just shows
except
the talent
the
that he has.
Except for the batting average.
Except for the batting average. Yeah, the batting average a little too low, but the homers, the RBIs, and throwing 15 steals, most other guys would take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, you're right.
Just shows you the talent that he has right there.
But throw Miggy's numbers up that I just gave you, 308, 25, and 70, just in the traditional stats. Compared to Mike Trout, who is, you know, an MVP candidate every year, maybe the best hitter in baseball. He's 318, 19, and 67.
Mm-hmm.
He's being outperformed by Miggy in most of those categories. His slash line, talking about Trout's, is 318, 430. That's higher, because what did I say Miggy was? 384, I think, when I talked about that as far as OBP.
I think so. Let me triple check.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. But Mike Trout is
306, 382 on base, 544 slugging from Miguel, 382. This is coming into today.
Okay, and Mike Trout's 318, 430, and 543. So and he's just one guy, you know, that we compare and we say who's the best hitter in baseball. If you start thinking about who the true best hitters in baseball are, there's only about five or six names that you can truly say and that are in the running for that year in and year out right now. And certainly Miguel Cabrera is still one of them. And that's the only way I'll leave it.
No question.
All right. We're going to get out because we got to get a top of the hour sports center. We're going to talk a little more baseball with Matt Lodi this time. We're going to go out to Cleveland and get the Cleveland side of things as we revel in the Tigers 8-game winning streak. When I say we, I mean Tigers fans, Hens fans, those loyal to the D. Celebrating the 8-game winning streak and the restarting of the American League Central race. I can promise you that out there in Cleveland, they're panicking. They're absolutely panicking, and they are nervous, and they feel like, oh, my God, all of this stuff that, you know, was so good. I mean, Jim, 3 days ago, one of the writers out there in Cleveland wrote that with the addition of Andrew Miller, the Indians are clearly the team to beat in the American League. They haven't won, now that they did today. I was going to say since Andrew Miller got there. He hasn't had a chance to be in a save opportunity or to contribute to holding a victory for the Indians at all. Not that it's his fault, of course. He did make one appearance in the first batter he faced homered off him.
And he made another appearance today, but it was already at least 6-2 by then, I believe.
So, I mean, it didn't really. But the point being, you know, a few days ago we were talking about how they might be the team to beat in the American League, and now I promise you they're panicking about whether or not they can even win the division.
I know I am. I tweeted the other day when I was asking, how is it the Indians can't beat the Twins? The follow-up part to that was, and this is the first time in a while that I'm genuinely worried.
Yeah, and me too. I've seen losses before. I've seen, you know, they even got swept by the Orioles, and I'm like, oh, that's okay. And the main reason why is it wasn't really coinciding with somebody else getting as hot.
Not to mention the Orioles are still a division leader, and Minnesota's the worst team in the American League.
But the other part about that was that while the Indians got swept by the Orioles, the Tigers made no move, and they were still, after getting swept, up 6.5. And that's when I said, boy, you know things are going well for you when you get swept, and you still have a 6.5-game division lead. But now, obviously, that's no longer the case. Now you lose 3 out of 4 to the Minnesota Twins, while the Tigers win 8 out of their last 9 now, assuming they don't win and have a comeback win here in the bottom of the 9th. And that's no guarantee, by the way. It's a 6-3 game going to the bottom of the 9th now for the Tigers at Comerica. With the magic we saw last night, too, from J.D. Martinez, who knows how this thing will end. But
they've already got a base runner. Do the Tigers to start that bottom of the 9th?
There you go. But assuming they do not come back and win this thing, it's still 8 out of 9, and that's why it's a different atmosphere and attitude out there in Cleveland. So we're going to talk to Lodi about that, a little more baseball conversation coming your way, but we have a lot of other stories to get to. Russell Westbrook making a deal in the NBA, a lot of conversation to be had there, a couple of things to speculate on as far as the NFL. Why is Trent Richardson being cut by the Baltimore Ravens, but still remember the former third overall pick in the draft, the same draft that had Andrew Luck going 1, Robert Griffin going 2, Trent Richardson going 3 to the Cleveland Browns. He has been cut now by his fourth team and yet is being praised by the coach that just cut him. That's a little bit of an interesting story. Maybe a Lions update, too. We'll squeeze as much as we can in to the second hour of the extravaganza, which is coming up directly on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
in the series, 2-for-12. And he just socked one to deep right center field. That's going to make it to the bullpen. He just woke up the Tribe's pen. And the Indians will play from in front. So much for keeping him in check. He just checked out. Now Carlos Santana, the 0-1. Hammer, deep left, onto the home run porch. And out onto the street. A two-out, three-run homer makes it 4-0 Cleveland.
Bottom of the eighth inning, 1-1 game. Look at this crowd at Comerica Park as J.D. Martinez steps to the plate to lead off here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
You think everybody missed him?
Oh, you love it.
That's pretty neat right there.
Listen to this reception for J.D. Injured in mid-June against Kansas City. He swings and drives one. Deep to center. On the run is Eaton. He's looking up.
Wow.
It's gone.
Are you kidding me?
Man. You talk about rising to the moment. J.D. Martinez, the first pitch off the disabled list. A bomb to straightaway center. 2-1 Tigers.
You cannot make it up, folks.
The 1-0. Swinging a soft ground ball to second. Kinsler charges, fields, flips to Cabrera. Tigers have won 8 straight. He swings and drives one. Center field deep. Boy, Collins going back onto the warning track at the fence, and it's on a home run.
Yikes.
What is it about Tigers pitching that brings out this in Abisail Garcia, his 9th home run, and they've all been big here at Comerica in the strike one. Line drive to left. That's deep in trouble, and that ball is gone. A home run.
Could be a real short day, huh?
Two-run shot for Jose Abreu. His first home run in 33 games. A 6-1 lead for the White Sox.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed hour number two of the extravaganza is underway right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. It has gone final, as you pointed out, Jim Cushlin.
Yes,
Tigers
indeed.
DC, their 8-game winning streak snapped.
Yeah, 6-3 the final. They got some runs late. Tyler Collins an RBI single. We touched on when we were talking with Anthony Fenech last segment. Miguel Cabrera, and he hit it off his almost shoe tops. That ball was almost in the dirt. But it wasn't enough when your starter just off the DL gives up 6 runs without getting out of the second inning.
Yeah, that's not a good return from the DL for Jordan Zimmermann. But again, all good things come to an end. You know, they weren't going to keep doing that at that pace. The question is now is, you know, the streak that they've been on, you know, it wasn't just, you know, one hot streak by one or two guys carrying them. It was the entire lineup, 1-9, as we pointed out.
Yep.
Hitting Miggy-like in terms of the slash line production, the rotation as a whole, not counting obviously what just happened with Jordan Zimmermann today. The starting rotation has been so much better too. Now, how do they pick it up now that the streak has ended? We saw what happened when the Indian streak ended. Things really, really, really leveled off, and I don't know if you can expect much, much of that to continue for the Tigers either. But it is back to a 3-game lead now for the Indians over the Tigers. We're going to catch up in the bottom of the hour at about 4:35 with Matt Lodi, who is out there actually doing interviews right now in Cleveland with the Indians, as Anthony Fenech had to jet to go get down to the clubhouse and get ready for the Tigers. That's where
yes, we were expecting Lodi here right about now, but he mentioned Fenech going down to the clubhouse. Well, Lodi's still in the clubhouse doing his main job, so we're going to let him do that before he chats with us.
Absolutely, and really good to have Anthony. Really good breakdown there. So the Tigers' winning streak comes to an end at 8 games. Final game of the series goes to the Sox, 6-3. Not an encouraging outing, not a solid outing at all from Jordan Zimmermann, but not anything to be panicked about either.
But you know what? Yes. Even though the Tigers' win streak's over, and if you're an Indians fan, you're breathing a tiny sigh of relief because, oh, good, they finally beat the Twins and gained a game back. But all of this means that here we are on August 4th, Bob, and we finally have the makings of an Indians v. Tigers August and September battle against each other. In 2013, even though the standings will forever say the Tigers beat the Indians in the division by a game, we all know it wasn't that close. It took a 10-game winning streak. 07, they were both over 500, but the Tigers really weren't that much of a threat to the Indians. You kind of have to go all the way back to 1940 when there were just, you know, AL and NL. There weren't even divisions back in those days. The last time the Indians v. Tigers truly had a race against each other, And now, because of what's transpired, really in the entire month of July and these first few days of August, I think we're finally going to have that. That's going to make for a fun August and September, I'll tell you that.
Well, it is until they play head-to-head.
that's when it's going to be its most fun.
Well, no, I mean, you would think that. But considering it's 11-1 or 1-11, depending on which side you root for, that might take the excitement right out of it.
I don't know. We kind of speculate on this. If you think back to that day, because that was an afternoon game, so we were talking about it, or, you know, almost live, if you will, because that's one of the reasons I love these random afternoon games like this, especially when everybody plays, you get that instant analysis from us. And we kind of speculate, you know, there's a chance if, you know, that this could be the kind of monkey off the back for the Tigers, and they're going to feel a lot better about themselves against that team the next time they face off in September. And if it's going to be a tight race as opposed to seven games or whatever the heck it was at that point, then I think I still give the Indians the advantage, just what we've seen out of 12 games against each other. But I got to think the Tigers feel a ton better about themselves against the Indians just because of what happened in that final game. Sometimes those things carry over. Ball players have memories.
Yeah, no question about that, and that certainly could be the case. All right, let's go to the phones. We want to get to some different people on the air to talk about some different things, and I got a call here waiting from Mark in Toledo who wants to shift gears to the NFL and talk about one of the NFL stories regarding the trading potentially of Josh McCown, possibly to the Cowboys, to back up Tony Romo. It's been one of the big stories around the league today. Should the Browns part ways with the guy who started last year, putting all of their eggs into the Robert Griffin basket, and if he doesn't pan out or gets hurt, handing the reins to a Cody Kessler? Or do you want that veteran back up in Cleveland? Mark, go right ahead. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking my call. First off, go Tribe. And then, so I think we need to sell Josh McCown, and I think we could get a third or fourth round pick from the Cowboys for him. They are desperate for a veteran quarterback as a backup for Romo. They haven't really had one, and McCown is arguably the best backup in the NFL. I mean, he's a proven solid backup. He can put your team in a position to win. And honestly, with the Browns, this season's going to be a dumpster fire anyway. So if RG3 gets hurt, well, then that might as well – we won't do something stupid like win five games and not have the first overall draft pick.
Well, I'll say this. If you could get what you just said, a third rounder perhaps for him, I would do that, absolutely. I don't know that I would go much worse than that, though. And you know, you can't just dump him for nothing and get, say, a fifth-round pick and put him in Dallas for that. And here's the reason why. I'm not in a huge hurry to part with him. It's not necessarily just the Robert Griffin thing. We know that Josh McCown is not the future quarterback of the Browns. He's too old for that. Robert Griffin is only, what, 26, 25 maybe, 26? He could be the future quarterback of the Browns. Cody Kessler could be. So you certainly say, well, we don't need to keep this old guy around as a backup for the dumpster fire. If we needed a quarterback here, we'll let one of the other young guys play. For me, it's the development of young receivers. They just drafted like 30 of them.
I understand that aspect of it.
That's a big part of it. Even though you don't want to, you know, you're not going to win a bunch of games this year. I think it is going to be a dumpster fire. It's a good description. You don't want to win a ton of games, but you want to take positive steps. And if you've got, you know, a rookie quarterback like Kessler forced to play in the event of a Griffin injury or Griffin not just being, you know, competent enough to do the job, which I don't think will be the case. I think he's going to be fine. I want to develop those young receivers. I want to develop even Terrell Pryor, and I want to do that with somebody who can actually have some experience putting the ball in the right place at the right time and who can make some plays here. So I wouldn't be in a huge hurry to dump Josh McCown unless I really got a nice pick for him, you know, a third-round draft pick or maybe another player and a lower draft pick.
Here's the X factor we're playing with. Jerry Jones is their GM, and he makes bad decisions. Lately, he's made some good decisions, but He makes some bad decisions, and I feel like he's just crazy enough to where he would sell a third-round draft pick for Josh McCown because he thinks, well, that'll get us to the Super Bowl, and you don't know how much money I would spend for a Super Bowl. And if we were dealing with a smart GM, then I would rule that out completely. But we're dealing with Jerry Jones here.
Yeah, you make a really good point, and you said he's made some good decisions recently. Which ones? I mean, the drafting of Elliott?
The O-line decisions. Building an O-line. Yeah.
Okay.
Building
I think, is a good one, too. But he's also made some absolute horrible decisions when it comes to personnel in the form of Randy Gregory, in the form of Greg Hardy, in the form of Rolando McClain. You know, this is a guy who has just taken chance after chance after chance on guys with questionable character and been burned again and again and again. For those who don't know, Rolando McClain, who was once a really, really highly touted linebacker in Oakland, came to as a rec. He retired, came back to Dallas as a reclamation project, and came into camp about 40 pounds overweight because he's addicted to the purple drank, as it's called in slang. Yeah, I mean, what is it? It's like Sprite and cough syrup and Skittles or something. It's
that's what the kids are drinking nowadays.
They get high on the codeine and the cough syrup and mix it with the Sprite or whatever and candies, and it turns into a nice flavorful high for these guys. And he's drank so much of it, literally purple drank, as it's called, D-R-A-N-K, that he's 40 pounds heavy. So anyway, Jerry Jones has made some terrible personnel decisions. And you're right. If we could exploit one of those and make another one by giving us maybe a better pick than what McCown is worth, I would consider doing it. But I like the idea of a veteran presence in a backup role in the event that he is needed so that we have a full year of development for some of these young weapons.
That makes sense. Quick traffic thing, and I'll let you guys go. There's an accident on Secor right by UT, so kind of avoid that area.
I appreciate the heads up, and we'll make sure we get that into our traffic department, too. Thank you very much.
No problem. Have a good one, Bob. Thanks.
You got it, brother. Good call. I appreciate it, Mark. Yeah, that's been a really interesting topic of discussion today, really all over, as the Cowboys scour the league for a backup. There was talk about Nick Foles. Possibly being that guy. They've kind of decided he's not an option there.
Well, he's not an option because he went to Kansas City apparently instead.
and that is obvious. When you're talking about Jerry Jones too, you have to also consider the fact that 4 days ago, wasn't it?
Yep.
Johnny Manziel, while leaving a club, did an interview while leaving a nightclub. Now, I don't know if he was drunk or not, or if he was even drinking, but he said, I would love to go to Dallas.
Point?
What's that?
With Manziel and clubs, does it really matter at this point?
No, it really doesn't. But when he said, I really want to go to Dallas and restart my career there and be a backup for Tony Romo there, you know, again, given the propensity for Jerry Jones to look for headlines as much as for wins,
right?
To look for ticket sales, to look for marketing opportunities, to keep the Dallas Cowboys America's team in the news, that sort of thing. It wouldn't be something that I would put past him.
No, I wouldn't either.
So, in other words, desperation can lead to poor decisions, and maybe he would make one and give the Browns more than what Josh McCown is worth.
And you know, two things that have been bubbling in my head ever since I read about the Cowboys were looking into this earlier today. One, what kind of bizarre world are we in where somebody wants a Cleveland Browns quarterback of any kind? First off, that's just funny to me on a different level. Secondly, I agree with you in principle. You'd want a more veteran, skilled backup, and McCown certainly is that. But this also feels like strike while the iron is hot. If Jerry Jones is willing to give you some kind of draft pick, try to work at three, maybe ends up a 4 or 5. You got to try to take that deal. You really do. I think so.
If you want
a veteran QB as your backup to RG3 and with Kessler hanging around, but I would strike while the iron's hot.
Speaking of draft picks and speaking of bad draft picks, I teased this about half an hour ago, so I just want to throw it in as long as we got back on the NFL discussion. Did you see John Harbaugh coming to the defense of Trent Richardson? The bust with the Browns.
Right.
Traded, shockingly, the Colts gave the Browns, talk about a steal there, a first-round pick for him, gets released by the Colts, goes to the Raiders, gets released by the Raiders, goes to the Ravens trying to reclaim his career and saying that he believes, what did he say? Like 3 weeks ago, before camp started, he said something to the effect of his goal this season is to become the best running back in the NFL. Did you catch that? Maybe it wasn't in those words, but it was something that was very, very braggadocious and very, very unrealistic. And not that you blame a guy for trying, not that you blame a guy for trying to think positive things and have positive thoughts and motivate yourself, but he said something to that effect where he was going to be the best running back in the NFL.
Right.
Well, come to find out, 4 days into camp, 5 days into camp, he's been released now by the Ravens. The moment he did that, the moment they released him, there was just a torrent of, I mean, let's be honest, you know, in the media, but mostly in fan circles, in new media, you know, the blogosphere and in social media, we can be pretty cruel. And a lot of people just really take joy in watching draft busts bust. You know, they took joy in watching Tim Tebow fail. Even though there was no real reason to, Tim Tebow wasn't an attitude problem. He wasn't a jerk. He wasn't cocky. He wasn't pompous. He wasn't, you know, starting fights. He wasn't being Johnny Manziel and abusing women. He wasn't going into the bars. He just prayed a lot and told people that he liked to pray, and that made him public enemy number one for a lot of people. And when he didn't make it, people loved that. They loved the bust that was Brian Bosworth. They loved watching Ryan Leaf crash and burn.
Right.
They loved watching, we can go on and on and on, with the number of people, Tim Couch, except for your Browns fans. Anyway, so they were ripping on Trent Richardson, the number three overall pick in the draft just 4 years ago that had, on 2012, that had Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin right in front of him. And he was getting, you know, really ripped in social media. John Harbaugh, who just cut him, took to the press conference to defend the guy he just cut. Quote, "I'll get on my soapbox here because I'm allowed to, but it's amazing to me the vitriol and really the hate that people want to put out." This is yesterday, John Harbaugh. "He's done nothing wrong. He's still trying very hard. He's just a young guy who's trying his best to make it in the league. And the reason they cut him, by the way, FYI, wasn't necessarily performance-related, although he is now being considered one of the biggest busts of the past decade because of performance-related issues. He just wasn't performing. He was out of football last year and is on his fourth team in four seasons now. The thing with Richardson is he's injured. Essentially, they couldn't wait anymore for him to come back from a knee injury. He was sitting there taking a roster spot, not practicing. And he had his knee scoped, and they couldn't wait any longer. So Harbaugh made a point of telling everybody to lay off Trent Richardson and stop telling jokes and stop bagging on him. Quote, "Because he was a top pick, I know it definitely comes with more scrutiny. Certainly he understands that, and he handles it really well. He's a good person. He wants to do well. He's a hard worker. There is the possibility that sometime, some way, some fashion, that he could make it back, or I'm sorry, come back here or somewhere else in the league. With Trent, it was strictly health. We knew the knee was a problem when we first brought him in. We were hopeful that he would work through it, but we just couldn't wait any longer. Yeah. We need the running back. We need the bodies out there practicing," end quote. So he wanted everybody to know that this wasn't just, hey, Trent really sucks. He sucked in Oakland, he sucked in Indianapolis, and he sucked in Cleveland, and now he sucked in Baltimore. We're done with this guy. He wanted him to know, he wanted everybody to know that he was working hard. And I will tell you this. Looking at the few stills that I have of him, still photographs, and limited video, too, he looks like he has worked. He looks leaner. He looks thinner. If you remember when he was, you know, came to the Browns out of the draft, he was a bulldozer. And in that first, was it his first carry in the league that he blew up the Eagle safety from Ohio State and blew his helmet off in that really infamous hit? And it looked like, oh, my God. The Browns got themselves a bruiser. They just got this beast.
And after his rookie year, I was just looking at some of his numbers. He did rush for 950 yards and 11 touchdowns. So even after season one, it's like, okay, he may not be the greatest running back ever, but maybe he'll be okay.
Well, his career yards per carry is 3.3.
That was what really did him in, despite those two numbers I just read.
Yeah, and in that first year that you talked about, the 950 yards, I think his longest run from scrimmage, was it over 20? I don't know if he had a run longer than 20 yards, or maybe it was not longer than 30, but basically showed
32.
No.
32 was his longest run in that 2012 rookie season.
How did you find that out so quickly? You didn't know I was going to ask it.
Pro Football, because I'm already on there, because, you know, we're going back to that draft, and him drafted number three, and then they, because of the trade with the Colts, then came after that, and I was trying to triple check, because I was like, now what happened with that draft pick, by the way?
Yeah. Okay, well, that's cool. And I'm glad you checked it out, but I knew that was his biggest
problem.
Here
because, I just found it too. It's because it was in the 2014 draft. Remember, because then they traded then Richardson, as we know, to the Colts for a first round draft pick. On the day that happened, I thought, oh, that's a coup. That's a steal.
Yep.
And I'm re-looking it up now. The Browns then, it was the 26th overall. It became the 26th overall in the 2014 draft. that's the pick they swap with the Eagles to get Manziel.
To get Johnny Manziel.
So it's kind of a wash both ways, actually.
Yep. Indeed. Although they did really
only the Browns.
I mean, if you think about it, it's not a wash from the Indianapolis point of view. They got taken. They got taken to the cleaners
they
on
still,
that.
That's true. They still lose an overall first-round pick.
They lose
that
a first-round pick that they likely would not have blown the way the Browns blew it.
Very true. See it goes to the Browns, and they end up blowing it, which kind of, from a Browns perspective, makes it feel like a wash. Oh, you turn this gift of a first-round pick into the bust Manziel. Good job, guys.
Are we, are we evil as fans because we do laugh at and cheers kind of, you know, busts like Trent Richardson?
No, I don't think so.
I just wonder, you know, I mean, it's not nice. Nobody should really want to see somebody fail unless they're a bad guy. When I think of a bad guy, I'll cheer their failure because I don't like, you know, like Greg Hardy, he sucked when he went to Dallas. And I'm glad he sucked because he's a jerk. He's a woman beater. He's an abusive domestic violence convict. He was convicted in a court of law for crying out loud. I don't want to see him do well. If he stinks and loses his career, I'm going to cheer it because, well, I just feel like, you know, good things shouldn't happen to bad people. But we do that sometimes to even good people. We do. We kind of make fun of draft busts. I don't think Tony Mandarich was a bad guy, but it was just funny that he was on Sports Illustrated in 1988 maybe or 9 or whatever it was as the Incredible Bulk, that infamous cover, and he was touted as, quote, the greatest offensive line prospect ever. Now, remember, back in the late 80s, you didn't have a steady line of 310 to 20-pound plus guys playing offensive tackle
Very
in the
true.
National Football
Oh,
League.
Absolutely true. I still remember as a kid watching those Jimmy Johnson Cowboys teams, and everyone was marveling at how everyone on the line was 300 pounds because that had never happened before.
Yeah, I mean, so it was rare to see a guy with his size, and I think he was listed at like 6'6 and 315.
That sounds about right.
And his speed and athleticism. That's why they called him the greatest offensive line prospect ever. You know, Orlando Pace was credited with, being the originator of the pancake block or the stat that was kept for the former Buckeye who's going into Canton.
Right.
This week, as a Hall of Famer. Orlando Pace, I think, was the first guy, but the first place I read about pancake blocks was in that Sports Illustrated article about, Tony Mandarich. But anyway, we all remember it, and I read about him. I was like, oh, my God, this guy is like a monster. He's like, you know, he's like Hulk Hogan in football. He's as big and as strong and athletic and as anybody you've ever seen. And then he goes in the NFL. They test for steroids. He has to get off the juice that we didn't know he was on in college, and he shrivels up a little bit and stinks. And people just, oh, what a bust, Tony, what a bum. And we take joy in it. We revel in it. Last time I checked, he didn't rob any banks. He didn't get caught, you know, doing lines of coke off of some hooker's stomach. He was just a football player, wasn't as good as a football player in the pros as he was supposed to be based on the college hype. So, you know, not a bad guy, but we laugh at it. And there's something in us as football fans, I think, that take too much joy in other people's misery.
That's not just football fans. A lot of sports fans. I mean, I'll be honest, ever since I was a kid, and I still to this day, if a New York Yankee screws up really, really badly, I take weird joy in that.
Well, no, that's not weird because that's a rival. I'm just talking about players that you don't even have an interest in.
Right.
Or on team. If a Yankee screws up, we hate the Yankees. So, of course. And if the Yankees make a bad pick or a bad trade, yeah, we laugh at it. That's not evil. That's rivalry. But I didn't have any rooting interest in Tony Mandarich as a Green Bay Packer, one way or the other. I didn't care about the San Diego Chargers. They're not a rival of my football team. You know, but yet I really, really laughed my head off when Ryan Leaf, who was supposed to be maybe as good of a prospect as Peyton Manning when they came out 1-2 that year.
God, that sounds so funny to say in 2016.
That, right?
But I remember that coming up at the time.
And I just enjoyed the heck out of his fall because he was a jerk. You know,
encapsulated by that infamous quote-unquote interview with the because
yeah,
that was supposed to be an interview.
Yeah. You know, so when bad guys have bad things happen to them, I'm fine with it. You know, I'm I'll make fun of it because I don't like bad guys having good things happen to them. I don't know, but if it happens to somebody that hasn't done anything wrong, why do we still take that same joy? Like I said, I mean, people, and Trent Richardson has never punched a nun. To my understanding, right?
This is true. No, from all indications,
he's never run his car into a traffic
citizen.
Cop the way Randy Moss once did.
No, you're right. As far as we know, Trent Richardson is an upstanding citizen. He just didn't have it as far as the NFL goes.
Yeah, he was just a great football player in college who was not a great football
player.
And
maybe I'm speaking just, for me, because when I think of it and think back of it when I'm laughing at the whole situation, I guess I'm not so much laughing at Trent Richardson. I'm laughing at the ineptitude of my football team, the Cleveland Browns, more than anything else, I think.
Okay, but again, then you were also laughing at the ineptitude of the Indianapolis Colts, who gave up a first-round pick for him. So the Browns spent a first-round pick on him. The Colts gave one up for him. And then the Raiders and the Ravens, not so much, because they just brought him in on minimum terms and they didn't really lose anything for it. But yeah, to me, it's, you know, when people are bagging on Trent Richardson, it's just, I don't know, it shows a dark side of us as fans where we have no rooting interest against or for him. And yeah, here we are. I'm going to go to Sylvania and get Steve on the line. Steve wants to go back to the Indians topic. All right. Looks like the lines are jacked up. Jim, you want to take this time out? Let's get them fixed. Tell me who's where. We'll come back, take some phone calls. Then we'll get Matt Lodi on the line, too, to kind of get a report on the struggling Indians who finally pulled out of their tailspin with a win today. But we'll do that after this time out in a sports center right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, we're going to be checking in out in Cleveland with Matt Lodi at Progressive Field after the Indians stopped their three-game losing streak to the Twins today. The Tigers had their eight-game winning streak stopped today, so the lead in the division is back to three games. That separate the Indians from the Tigers. We'll do that here in just a few. Jimmy in Toledo, though, wants to get in on this Trent Richardson conversation before we go back to baseball, so let's do that. Jimmy, go right ahead, sir.
Hey, what's up, man? I can comment on some baseball, too, but first of all, it's all the losers that like to jack up everybody anonymously and take pleasure in somebody else's misery. Then you got bigger problems than the guys that are.
Schadenfreude is what it's called.
Yeah, Schadenfreude.
Yeah.
And I mean, I get it on some level, you know, cause, you know, like you said, I never cried too much about any spilled milk where the Yankees are concerned or, you know,
First of all, if it's a rival of yours, you know, if you're a Browns fan and the Steelers, something happens to the Steelers, you know, you're happy about that. If you're a Lions fan and something happens, say, to the Packers, you're happy about that. Everybody's happy when something bad happens to the Yankees, but it's weird how we as sports fans, even if we don't have a rivalry or a rooting interest, if we just see somebody fall flat who was supposed, I mean, here, I'll give you another example. Who's one of the most made fun of top draft picks in the NBA in recent NBA history? You know what I'm talking about? High school kid came out, was supposed to be a superstar, turned out to be one of the biggest busts all time. Kwame Brown.
Corleone Young, too, if you remember that name.
He was 18, 19 years old, like LeBron James when he came out of high school. He wasn't ready. He wasn't as good as people thought. He wasn't as good as Michael Jordan thought, because that's who took him. And it just didn't work out. And people use him as a punchline, like I said before about some other guys. I don't think he was ever busted doing coke off a stripper's stomach. He didn't break any laws. He didn't break any rules. He just wasn't a very good player, and people just have fun with that.
Glad you brought up Kwame Brown real quick, because I almost wonder, is that more on Kwame Brown itself, or is that laughing indirectly at Jordan?
Well, I guess, but you know what? If you ask most people who Kwame Brown is, they're just going to say the bust that was the number one overall pick. They're not going to say the guy that Michael Jordan screwed up on and misevaluated.
Well, and the problem is he doesn't have any time to grow, because in the NBA, they don't really practice. They have walk-arounds.
That's true.
You don't have time to practice in an 82-game schedule.
So real quick, Jimmy, because I got to get to some other things. What about Trent? What's your thought on Trent?
Well, just everybody getting crazy on Trent Richardson. I wonder how many of these guys have illegitimate children and extra baby mamas and don't take care of their kids or spend a weekend with them every month and think they're a great father. Well, you know, the joke's on you. Yeah, everybody does it. It's anonymous, and it's just an easy way to get off on somebody else. I got fed up with it with Tim Tebow. Like you said, everybody hated him just because, well, he's too good to be true, see? Because he doesn't conform to the stereotypes. But yet, every single one of these guys that would rag on him, if they had daughters, would love for them to marry a guy like Tim Tebow.
That's more about
their own insecurity than it does anything.
That is a great point, Jimmy, and I'm glad you brought that up, especially on the Tebow side, which is the exact opposite of some of these other reasons why people hate on these guys who fail in their respective
sports. That drove me crazy. I just never understood it. It's just, you know, some people just, You know, we live in a really jaded,
it speaks to their own inadequacies
world.
Is what it is. Honestly, it's a lot of jealousy. Here's a guy who is very, very happy and very, very proud about being Christian and saying that he prays to God and thanking God. And to everybody else, it's like that's taboo. It's like I don't go to church every week. I don't feel the same way he does. I'm not touched by God maybe the way he is. And so therefore, maybe something's wrong with him. Otherwise, I have to acknowledge something is wrong with me.
Well, let's face it. Tim Tebow's the only guy that you can really rip on in society anymore with the way everybody's jaded and cynical and politically correct, that, you know, a young Christian white male is just about...
That's true.
He fills out every... You can rip and bag on only that. If you could tear him apart limb from limb from limb, all of his white privilege and all this other BS nonsense, it's just racism is all it is. But you're allowed to do it because we have this cultural Marxism now in this society, and Basically anything that's traditionally been American values is it's 180 degrees upside down, and they're the bad guys.
Yep, you're exactly right. He's a target. He's a target because he is a straight white Christian male. If he doesn't belong to a protected group or protected class, he is a target, and that's a great example. Jimmy, I got to run,
yeah,
brother. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I want to get to Matt Lodi out in Cleveland. As promised, we had a real interesting conversation with Anthony Fenech, the beat writer for the Free Press covering the Tigers, and their surge, 8 straight before today's loss finally ends that streak to the Chicago White Sox. The Indians have been on the exact opposite kind of a run. They ended up sweeping the terrible Oakland A's team over this past weekend, but then lost 3 in a row to the woeful Minnesota Twins before ending that losing streak today out in Cleveland. Matt Lodi with an update on the Indians and what's going on out there at Progressive Field. Matt, how are you, sir?
Hey, Bob. Good afternoon.
Good to have you. Thanks for spending the time with us. Matt, you know, when you and I've been telling everybody that I talked to this because we've almost had a unanimous belief in terms of how this division race is going to go in the second half, we've all said, and I think you said also, that the Indians pitching staff is too good for them to go into prolonged losing streaks or prolonged,
right,
you know, 7 out of 10s or that kind of thing because their starters are so good. But now we're starting to see some chinks in the armor, if you will, and the starting pitching is not only not performing, at least 1/5 of it is injured in terms of Danny Salazar, who is now on the disabled list. That pitching was supposed to be the difference maker. It might be, but in the reverse way than we expected. Why are the Indian starters, and I'm talking Bauer and Carrasco and obviously Salazar before going down, and Kluber is inconsistent, why have they been scuffling?
Well, Carrasco, to me, you know, had kind of a tough July. You know, and I don't know, Bob, if he's ever been 100% since coming back off the injury suffered back in April in Detroit. You know, I think that's something that's been underlying all year. I'm not saying that he's still injured. I'm just saying that I think it takes a while for a guy like that to come back. And he's shown flashes of being, you know, one of the really good pitchers in the American League again. But I still think that, you know, on the off days when he's not right, he struggles. And he certainly did struggle the other night. Same with Trevor Bauer. You know, let's not forget Trevor wasn't even in this rotation at the start of the season. And you know, a lot of people felt like he was going to, you know, some way, somehow have a part, and he certainly has had a part. But at the same time, again, this is a guy who's still very young, who's still, I think, more mentally than physically a lot of times gets in his head when he doesn't have a good outing, or not even a good outing, but a good inning. And even last night, same thing, just, you know, just got beat around. And I do say this about Trevor. I appreciated his honesty after the game and just saying that, hey, I didn't get the job done. We have seen, unfortunately, Trevor being a young guy and a very analytical guy, if you will, more than one occasion where he'll come into our interview room and be like, well, I thought I was fine. Well, he knew that last night he did not get the job done, and they just kind of, as he put it, kind of beat our brains in. And you know, here's another thing. Let's give some
credit. They've beaten everybody's brains in, though, that has started for the Indians. I mean, for goodness sakes, first 3 games of this 4-game set, double-digit numbers in the runs column. I mean, again, that's why I point to Carrasco and Salazar and Bauer last night. It's been almost everybody. It's, I guess, you know, maybe poor pitching performances can be as contagious as hot ones, just like sometimes slumps can extend from one player to another, just in the same way that hot streaks can.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, I'm also going to, you know, I don't want to sit here and jump on the Twins bandwagon by any means, but give them a little credit. I mean, they were the second most, they scored the second most runs of any team in baseball in July. I mean, they were hitting about as well as a lot of teams in the majors, and not a lot of people were noticing it because they were so bad early in the year and they're so far out of the race. I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, that top three in the order right now with Dozier, Mauer, and Kepler, those three guys were just incredible in this series. Now, that doesn't mean that it is an excuse for the Indians to lose three out of four, but at the same time, right now, the Twins are just one of those teams. They just have the Indians' numbers, and I thought, you know, after they split with Washington, and then they got right real quickly against Oakland, a bad team out west, I thought, okay, if they could just split with Minnesota, they'd feel a lot better about themselves. Now, winning today, I think, was ultra important because they clearly, again, like you said, they did not play well at all the first three games of the series. Other than the six-run inning they had the second night when Carrasco got them in an 8-0 hole, I thought all three games of that first three, they just did not play well, did not play with defense. You know, there were situations in those games they could have got back in the games with a big hit. They didn't do it. So, you know, they got this behind them, and I think the way they look at it is, look, we're still three up in the division. We've still played incredibly well against Detroit. I mean, more so than I think a lot of people thought they would, anybody thought they would the whole year against Detroit. So let's just get on the road, get to New York, hopefully get a couple there, and then come back. And they've got an 11-game homestand when they come home. And it's the Angels who are a bad team, the White Sox who are, you know, kind of a bad team. And they've got the one game in there against Boston that's a makeup game. And then they've got Kansas City. So they've got an opportunity, Bob, when they come home for that 11-game homestand, hopefully, in their case, to kind of right the ship. Hopefully Salazar gets healthy and gets through his troubles. And this team gets a little bit more, quote-unquote, back on track. I still think that a year ago at this time, if you would have said, hey, the Indians are going to be three games up on the Tigers on August 4th, a lot of people would say, yeah, I'll take it, even though they were, what, 7.5 up at one point not that long ago.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, I mean, yeah, I guess you're supposed to. So if you 3 months ago somebody said you're up three on August 4th, sure, that's great. But it's been the other direction. I want to go back to one thing, though, about Carrasco. You talked about you don't even know if he's fully healthy. I don't see that. I'm looking at a guy where what we're seeing right now is the aberration. His July, well, let's actually go back to June 19th. He had won six of his last eight starts. Well, hold on. The results were six of his last eight. I don't know if he actually got the decision in each of those. But his ERA in the month of July in five starts, was 2.22. He had a fantastic July, I thought. So that's why I was a little concerned with what I saw here in August on Tuesday when he gave up those nine hits and eight runs, all of them earned, and was not himself. If he's not healthy now, I think it's a recurrence of the injury, not an extension of not being healthy since he came off the DL. Because he was, like I said, 2.22. He was lights out in July and was actually the best pitcher in the American League in terms of ERA had he had enough innings to qualify.
Well, there was something said in the post game that kind of alerted me to, I don't know, again, I don't want to say health, but just something wasn't clicking that night. And that was something about learning you know, throughout the course of the game, some things he was doing wrong. And you don't normally hear guys that are entrenched in the middle of a season who are, you know, as good as you've seen Carlos be at points, say, you know, I really learned a few things tonight. You know, it was an odd statement that, you know, I kind of kept in the back of my head, like, is he talking about, you know, something he's not doing in the delivery, something he's not doing when he's pushing off the front foot? Because, again, there was an injury that, you know, had a lot to do more with the bottom half of his body, more so even than the upper half.
Right.
It just didn't make sense to me to say something like that on July 30th or July 31st or August 1st, whatever it might have been that date, that for him to give up, to have that bad of an outing. And you know, Carlos has always been the type of guy, he's not a yeller, he's not a screamer, he's not an emotional guy. He's always pretty laid back with us. And, you know, that statement kind of said, just didn't sound right. You know what I mean? And, you know, Danny, of course, the Tuesday night game, he was obviously very concerned because here was a guy who knew something in his elbow didn't feel right. And, you know, this is a guy who had Tommy John at one point in his career a couple years ago. And he said, you know, thankfully that it didn't feel the same. It wasn't like he didn't feel like it was a ligament situation.
Right.
But he definitely felt like something wasn't going right in the elbow. Something didn't feel right in the elbow. Turns out it's inflammation. Turns out it looks like he'll be okay. But, you know, those two guys, I don't know, Bob, it just, you know, again, just their words in the post game didn't really sit right with me. Certainly Danny we knew, but then Carlos with on
well,
Wednesday night.
Right. Well, the radar gun told us what Danny told us.
Right.
Because he lost velocity on that fastball big time.
Yeah,
Carrasco,
no doubt.
By the way, to the point I was making before, he did get decisions in seven out of those eight, and he was 5-2. He won five out of his last seven starts through July, from July June 25th through July. So that start at home against at Progressive Field against Minnesota on Tuesday was the aberration, I think, and hopefully he'll get hit that turn right back around and go in the other direction in his next start. Will he be, I don't know where we are now. Is it
Corey? He would be, Wednesday, Thursday, tomorrow would be Tomlin because they switched Clevinger for Tomlin because they felt like, you know, having Clevinger pitch at home was a lot more conducive than going to New York, even though the Yankees are not going anywhere this year. Going to New York and pitching in front of that crowd, you know, they felt like, let's let him pitch here at Progressive Field. You know, if there's one guy who will not get affected by, a New York crowd, it's Josh Tomlin. And Terry Francona even said that. He goes, he said something effective like, Josh can overcome anything. So, it was the smart decision.
It's a good point.
He's got the win today. Yeah, even though you would have loved to have had a Tomlin on the mound today because you just wanted to find a way, no matter what it was or how it was, to get this win today. But they were obviously able to do it. The bats today were really good. Santiago had the bad inning in which he gave up the three-run homer to Carlos, and that kind of propelled them, I guess, if you will, to the 9-2 win. And then Lindor's homer, Kipnis had a homer, and even J-Ram, Jose Ramirez had a home run today as well. So, again, this is the type of day today where everything kind of worked, everything went right. The way that Terry used the back end of that bullpen today, Dan Otero got really big four outs today after Clevinger got pulled after 4 1/3. And then, you know, we got to see Andrew Miller when it counted. And then that was obviously a key as well is, you know, this is a guy who a lot of people thought, you know, hey, this is the key piece of this July trade, if you will, or the July trade deadline was Andrew Miller. The Indians got him, and he got 3 out of 4 outs today by strikeouts. And that's the guy you want, you know what I mean? And even though Terry admitted that he didn't want to have to go to Andrew that early with 2 outs in the 6th inning, he pitched the 6th and 7th and then Shaw in the 8th, and then that was enough. And then by then they had built a lead. They didn't even have to go to Cody Allen in the 9th inning.
Yeah, that's a great point. And real quick before you go, Matt, because we're a little short on time, we've got to get out of here and get ready for drive time. What is your take on the Tigers' surge that coincided with the Indians' struggle here, especially against Minnesota? They had 8 in a row going into today. The pitching rotation was so much better. The lineup, now that they got J.D. Martinez back as well, has been just, you know, thumping the baseball, putting up big numbers. In that 8-game winning streak, too, was so impressive by the Tigers because of who it was against. 3 over Boston, 3 over Houston, both in their own division races. And now the White Sox, not as much that they ended up losing today to. But what is your take? Is Detroit suddenly finding out how good they are, or are they just hot right now and they're going to cool off?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I haven't seen Detroit as much, even I'm sure as you have. But at the same time, J.D. Martinez, to me, is a huge, big part of that lineup. And, you know, when they lost him with the elbow injury, I wasn't a big surprise to me that the middle of that lineup had struggled. I know Miggy's gotten hot, and that's a big deal. I think Detroit's going to be around. I don't think this thing is over by a long shot. I look for the fact that these two teams still have to play a couple more times with that big 4-game series at the end of the season in Detroit. I think that could still mean something by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah, they got seven more.
I think it's going to matter, Bob. I really do. And right now it's 3 games, and I'm sure the Indians are hopeful to get out of town and get 3 in New York over the weekend.
All right, Matt Lodi, thanks for the update from Cleveland. We appreciate it. Glad to see that losing streak snapped with the win today. And we'll look forward to catching up with you again down the road.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Matt. Music is play, and that means drive time is on its way, and we got to get up and out of here. Thanks so much to Anthony Fennec, who talked Tigers with us from the Detroit Free Press. Thanks also to Matt for talking Indians with us. And thanks to you for listening, being a part of the show in whatever way that you are. Mike Miller coming up on Drive Time. Stay where you are. We'll see you tomorrow at 3 o'clock for the next extravaganza on a free-for-all Friday. We're out.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.